Hi, I'm Dan Webster, film critic for Spokane Public Radio and blogger for Spokesman.com.
And I'm Mary Pat Truthart, part-time film critic, part-time very bad golfer.
And I'm Nathan Weinbender, also a film critic for Spokane Public Radio.
And welcome to Movies 101, the show that seldom questions itself, not as long as we stay away from the topic of which treats are best for movie-going. Then the queries, not to mention arguments, are endless. Let me just settle things. Freshly popped, buttered popcorn, heavily salted. Anyway, the question for us this week involves character, which is something that both films we will be discussing have in common. In Todd Phillips's Joker Folie à Deux, the question is, who is the real Arthur Fleck? In Aaron Schimberg's A Different Man, the question concerns how much of a difference, if any at all, physical appearance can make. Let's begin by tackling a couple who have sterling DC Comics credentials. I'm talking, of course, of the Joker and his off-again, on-again paramour, Harley Quinn. Only in Todd Phillips' version, the two are Arthur Fleck, played by Joaquin Phoenix, and Lee Quinzel, played by Lady Gaga. Arthur, of course, is the character from Phillips' 2019 film Joker, a role that won Phoenix a Best Actor Oscar. And Phillips' latest effort is that film's sequel, taking up with Arthur being tried for the murder of the television host Murray Franklin, played by Robert De Niro. While incarcerated and waiting his trial, Arthur meets Lee, who, it turns out, has had herself committed just to be able to meet him, and thus starts their love story, such as it is. Joker, Folie à Deux, which basically translates as Joker, Shared Delusion, or Joker, Shared Mental Disorder, is unusual and thus different from the 2019 original, in that much of it is rendered by Phillips as a movie musical. Instead of simply portraying Arthur, say, dancing on a series of steps in his weirdly personal way, the Arthur here, in his mind anyway, engages in fully produced musical numbers, many of them performed with Lee and backed by a full orchestra. The result is strangely effective, despite Phoenix's inability to carry a tune, though Gaga obviously can. Phillips, then, has succeeded in distancing the film from any kind of DC superhero referencing while plunging it into an intriguing study of mental illness, poverty, police brutality, media overkill, judicial indifference, and the kind of overweening sense of rage that we can all find so familiar in contemporary society. And two, he's both closed out Arthur's story while, at once, seemingly given us an origin story for a real kind of Joker.
Well, this film should be something that naturally plays into all of my interests in terms of, Dan's going to make me say the French, Joker, Folie à Deux. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay. Close enough.
Close enough.
So things that I can appreciate. And certainly we need to start by looking at the performance of Joaquin Phoenix. So he's continuing his portrayal from the first film, but now he's going to even become more creepy and more mysterious and more, I guess, bipolar in some ways.
Certainly troubled, yeah.
Yeah, troubled's a good way to look at it. But this film, having been turned into a musical, I mean, Dan said it was strangely affecting. It's also very strange, and I think that we should acknowledge that, because just by putting Lady Gaga into the role of Harley Quinn, we knew that it was going to sort of change the dynamic of what was happening here. And you mentioned, Dan, the fact that Joaquin Phoenix can barely sing. Lady Gaga, who we know can really sing, has pulled it back way, way too much, in my opinion, here. Because one of the benefits of having her in a film should be the opportunity to hear her really sing, which she does only on maybe one occasion during the course of this movie. So the real plot points here center on the courtroom scenes in particular. Catherine Keener, not sure she was the best choice to be his attorney. So she's Arthur Fleck's attorney, and she is plagued by having to do what she thinks is in the best interest of her client. But at the same time, as a zealous advocate, she has to do what he wants. And he's not really sure what he wants, to my way of thinking. So he knows that he has some troubles, but he's sort of betwixt and between about the whole notion of using an insanity defense and this alter ego, this sort of disassociative identity disorder, as an explanation. So did he commit these murders, and we find out there's more than one, and one unknown one, or did the Joker, his alter ego, commit these crimes? And so that part of the trial becomes a little bit confused because we don't know who's going to be presenting what version of the story at any given point. So the good things, I actually liked the musical aspect of it, although I thought that, as I said, Lady Gaga could have had more to do. I, of course, liked Joaquin Phoenix's performance, but this film to me took a big swing and just kind of missed in the end. But I'll be really curious to hear what Nathan has to say, because he's our DC Marvel Comics aficionado.
Well, I don't know about that. I mean, I've seen most, if not all, of the movies, but I'm not like an expert. So let's get that out of the way. I wouldn't be called to trial as an expert on this case.
Expert
I guess
witness.
Is what I
right.
would say, yeah. So I wasn't exactly clamoring for a Joker 2, but I'll admit that I was intrigued by the idea of making it into a musical, because that's at least different. And also, I just think there need to be more big screen musicals in the world. But I thought that Joker 2 was real slow and real boring and felt like it was marking time and like scenes were repeating themselves in the middle of it. It just never seemed to end. And it kind of felt to me like a musical being made by somebody that doesn't like musicals very much. And I don't know about Todd Phillips' preferences, but he shows us throughout the movie clips of the film, The Bandwagon. My favorite part of the movie was it opens with this Tex Avery-style cartoon short.
Yeah.
And the movie never really opens up in that way, except for one musical number near the middle where they're in the courtroom and Joker and Harley Quinn kind of let loose and, you know, they're bashing Harvey Dent over the head with the chairs in the courtroom. And I thought that's when the movie kind of let loose. But the rest of the time, it felt weirdly reserved to me. It just never took off. And you mentioned the idea of Lady Gaga not having much to do. This is supposed to be a duet. It's in the title of the film. It's this whole idea that this is a two-hander between Joaquin Phoenix and Lady Gaga. She felt like a complete non-entity in this movie to me. Like, she felt like an afterthought. And I've read since the movie came out that scenes of hers had been cut out. But it just made me wonder, who is she? Why is she attracted to this particular form of madness? Is she really mad herself? The movie is clearly trying to leave those kind of mysterious, but in a way that didn't feel satisfyingly mysterious to me.
To you.
Yeah. And, well, hey, that's what the show is about, right? And yeah, I thought this was actually pretty horrible. And I got to say, a lot of the animosity towards this movie, because it hasn't done well with critics or audiences.
No, and they're idiots.
Come on. You're really going to come on the show now and defend Joker 2?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I defended Megalopolis last week.
Exactly.
I get it.
Which I think maybe is what really fuels my affection for this film. Because we did last week two films that were, boy, people trying for home runs and totally whiffing. And I think Phillips did the same thing this week, but I don't think he whiffs. Now, to be perfectly honest, we have to point out that we went to see this movie at AMC in the digital, and the whole thing got screwed up. It was out of whack and everything, and they stopped
sound.
It 15 minutes from the end. They stopped the movie, and so we had to go over and see the end of the movie in IMAX.
Oh, man.
Despite all that, the movie worked for me.
Maybe because of all that.
Maybe. The movie for me works on every level. It was not slow for me. It was deliberately meditative. I just thought, this may make one of my top 10 list.
Oh,
yes. I really, really enjoyed this film.
Okay.
And I don't really understand the hatred for it.
Well, I have to say that I think going back to the first Joker, a lot of the reviews of that movie were less about the quality and content of the movie and more about the perceived audience that could potentially misunderstand what the movie was about.
And some of them did, apparently.
Well, yeah,
at some
of course.
Live screenings.
And I do think that a lot of the fan animosity towards Joker 2 is because the movie is putting its central character on trial and by way of that, putting its audience on trial. And maybe they didn't like that very much. And that's not why I dislike this movie.
You did a pretty good argument.
I just don't think it works. I mean, again, I appreciate the swing. All of the things you said in your intro about, you know, it was about police brutality, it was about the justice system, it was about, you know, the lack of social services. All of that was in the first movie. So I just don't think that this went anywhere new. And it felt like the musical numbers were I don't know. It's an interesting idea, but I don't think the musical numbers enrich the material in any way at all. It just felt like a gimmick to me. And I also don't think any of the musical numbers, except for the one I mentioned, were very good or shot in a particularly interesting way.
Well, it's
for
me, very gloomy. And,
no, no, no.
And,
yeah, for me, it works simply because it's a delving into the mind of this guy. And so that's why I'm able to give it a pass on most of the complaints that you have.
Do you think it's better than the first Joker?
Absolutely.
Huh. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, hey, to each their own, right?
Exactly.
Again, I want to say, I defended Megalopolis last week. I do not have a leg to stand on.
I'm today's Richard Brody.
Hey,
here
were
last week's Richard Brody.
Yeah, yeah.
At any rate, that was our discussion of Joker Folie à Deux. This is Movies 101, and it's time to take a short break. Before we go, remember that you can access podcasts of Movies 101 by going online at SpokanePublicRadio.org. While there, check out the individual reviews that Nathan and I write. Don't do it now, though, because we'll be right back to discuss A Different Man. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio. And we're back. This is Movies 101, and I'm your host, Dan Webster. During the first half of the show, Mayor Pat Truthart, Nathan Weinbinder, and I argued about Todd Phillips' film Joker Folie à Deux. Let's now tackle a film that, in its own unique way, also explores what it means to delve into the very meaning of self. Shades of Peter Bogdanovich's 1985 film Mask, in which Eric Stoltz played a character afflicted with a massive facial deformity, the character Edward, played by Sebastian Stan, at least when we first meet him, endures a similar kind of situation. We're talking about the film A Different Man. And the condition Edward faces is known as neurofibromatosis, which has caused tumors to grow and deform his face, has turned him into a shy, inhibited man who lives alone and acts on occasion in roles that are basically cautionary public interest ads. His life begins to change when he is offered the chance to take part in an experimental drug program, which slowly and painfully heals him physically, but clearly not emotionally. He becomes obsessed with the pretty young playwright played by Norwegian-born Renate Rinsva, and after failing to connect with her initially, once he is healed, he again seeks her out and ends up auditioning for and winning the lead role in a play she has written. The role is as a character that, curiously enough, is based on his own former self. But then enters Oswald, played by Adam Pearson, whose own deformity doesn't stop him from being engaging, popular, and everything the former Edward wasn't. And the irony of that situation causes Edward to emotionally implode. As written and directed by Adam Schindberg, A Different Man ends up being a bit too complicated and confusing for its own good. But the main theme, which calls into question callous and/or insulting reactions to so-called abnormalities, is a good one. And the acting, especially by Stan and Pearson, is outstanding.
I don't know what I expected from this movie going in, but I wasn't expecting it to be as funny as it is. I thought A Different Man was going to be sort of a Charlie Kaufman-esque fantasy or sci-fi film.
And you've been looking forward to this movie quite a while.
Yeah, debuted at Sundance at the very beginning of the year, I think, and ever since then I've been keeping an eye out for it. But the movie has kind of like a dark comedy to it. Like, it almost feels like an O. Henry story in a lot of ways with all the dramatic ironies that are going on. And I would say that the movie is basically divided into two halves. There's the half where Sebastian Stan is playing Edward, and then there's the half where he's playing Guy. And then there's like a half hour left in this 2-hour movie, and then Oswald comes in and he throws a wrench into the whole thing, and the movie becomes something totally different, and I think way wilder and even funnier than it has been. And I mentioned Charlie Kaufman, but I was, of course, thinking of Being John Malkovich all the way through A Different Man. I mean, that whole idea of living life as another person and all of the metaphysical and psychological implications that go into that. The apartment building that Edward slash Guy lives in felt like something out of Bo is Afraid.
Bo is Afraid, we both said that,
You
yes.
know, there's all this unease and disruption going on, and there's this weird metaphorical hole in the ceiling. Mm-hmm. And then I was also thinking of a movie that's still in theaters right now, but The Substance. I mean, just this idea of, you know, the emptiness of physical transformation, kind of what goes along with all of that. And I think ultimately A Different Man is a movie about perception. And it even kind of forced me to think about my own perception of the main character after this transformation that he goes through, where he now looks like movie star Sebastian Stan, right? And I realized that in the first half, I was looking at him with this kind of empathy. And then as the movie went on and he, you know, looks like Bucky Barnes in the second half of the movie, I had no problem laughing at his misfortunes. And I thought, why is that? Isn't that interesting?
That is curious.
And there are all these shots in the movie of Sebastian Stan looking at other people, looking at the Oswald character. And the movie doesn't say it out loud, but you can tell he's thinking, why did nobody ever look at me that way when I looked like him? Mm-hmm. And I don't know. There's just the gears start turning in your head.
But my question is, I fully expected you to focus on Ingrid.
Oh, because she's played by the star of one of my favorite movies.
Correct.
Yeah,
the worst person in the world.
In the world,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, and apart from the bad hair that they forced upon her, I mean, she is sort of the fulcrum around which everything happens, because she just comes on the Edward character first, feels a little bit put off, you know, she sort of shrinks back a little bit, and then she decides, oh, I'm going to befriend him. So she is his neighbor in this dreary apartment complex. And then we're curious, is she going to be something more? Is she going to help him with his acting? Because Edward is an aspiring actor.
Right.
But all he's been able to do thus far is to pull down these parts in these sort of training videos about people with disabilities.
Which are horrifying,
right,
and also very funny in how horrifying
right.
they are.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And so he discovers that she's a playwright, and then they sort of end up going their separate ways. And of course, we know at some point they're going to reconnect. And so I liked her role because it's this very much a film with Stan and Pearson, ultimately. But, I mean, she's an important part. I mean, she's sort of a key player. And I don't know about the ending. Like, when we got to the ending, I was like, I don't know if I can go there, but whatever.
My big problem with that final third is there's an act of violence that takes place that I think is unnecessary and could have been handled in another way. It just seemingly, to me, it came out of nowhere, and I didn't understand the whole reason behind it. It does lead to Guy Edwards' transition into an even third way of being in the world, but I think it could have been handled another way.
Yeah,
I just didn't think it was
necessary.
Yeah, it
did kind of feel like a screenwriter shock moment a little bit. I don't disagree with that. Yeah, I want to go back to the character played by Renata Rensve, because I think you're totally right that that character could have easily been completely wasted or a total non-entity or just there to further the arcs of the two male characters. And it's not that way. And then what I found really rich about A Different Man and that whole idea of looking back at characters as they behaved in the first half of the movie, once you get to the second half of the movie, is that she is, as you mentioned in your intro, Dan, Ingrid has written this play that is about her relationship with Edward. And at this point in the film, because he has made that transformation, she believes that Edward has died. And so she has written this, you know,
sort of
this black
homage
box play.
And sort of like, yeah.
Right. But it's deliberately pulling from things that we have seen from earlier in the movie. And then that makes you think about their friendship in the beginning part, where you think, was that totally above board? Was she?
Was it transactional only?
And is she exploiting him for her own gains? And then once Guy becomes part of the production, what does that mean for that character? There's lots of stuff going on
well,
in this
then
that
at
I think
one
is
point
really
they
interesting.
Look back and talk about, gee, were we really exploitative when I came up with this play? So she's rethinking everything that happened before.
Yeah,
right, right.
You know, and she says at one point when they start getting together, you realize that Edward, now Guy, is really taken with her. But she's basically talking so many jilted lovers, you know, so you know she's been here before.
Yeah, she even warns him.
Exactly.
You know, like
exactly.
I have, you know, I people in my wake. Or
one of the most impressive things to me about A Different Man was the role that Adam Pearson plays, Oswald. you never quite know where he's coming from. I mean, he's genial, he's wonderful, but is he totally passive-aggressive?
Well, and he comes like sweeping in like from stage right or something, yeah. Like, hello, everybody.
And it's like, oh, I don't...
And he's like a dandy, kind of.
I don't mean to be here, I don't mean to interrupt, but yes, he does.
And then
he takes joy in interrupting.
Yes, and then the ways he shows up in Guy's life, there's a scene where Guy's like walking through the park and he kind of just comes popping in from out of nowhere.
Right.
Like, is he following him? Is he some kind of, you know, presence that is...
I know. I almost
him.
Thought he was artificial to
right.
begin with. I thought he was like a specter or whatever.
Right. But we have to point out, this is his actual physiognomy.
Yes, he has neurofibromatosis. Or
yes.
I'm probably mispronouncing that. But he
the
has
Adam
that
Pearson,
life,
yes.
The actor does.
Yes.
And Adam Pearson, you might recognize him from about a decade ago. He had a small part in the Jonathan Glazer movie, Under the Skin.
Yep.
Since then, he's had sort of a career as a TV presenter in the UK because he's British. And this is one of a few movies that he's been in. But I think that he is kind of the key that unlocks this movie, A Different Man, because he is the agent of both change and chaos that
mm-hmm.
comes in.
Yep.
And then we start to see this perfect life that this guy has created for himself just totally fall apart
mm-hmm.
In ways that are both haunting and sad, but also weirdly madcap and
well,
fun.
Right.
He sabotages himself, yes.
Well,
yes,
and the thing is,
maybe
we also don't know. I mean, they sort of play a little fast and loose with the time frame.
Yeah.
So we don't know how much time has passed because we find out Guy, Edward in his new incarnation, is this very successful like real estate
yeah.
agent. So he's the face of, you know, property.
And he lives in this beautiful apartment.
Right,
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah.
How many years did that
yeah,
take?
Exactly,
yeah,
exactly. But all in all, after waiting so long for this, Nathan, final verdict?
I really liked this movie. It's very singular. It's very strange. One of those movies that not everyone's going to be on its wavelength, but
no.
I very much was. And I think the three performances are really special. Yeah, this is just such a twisted, strange, but kind of weirdly empathetic little
right,
movie.
Right, because you empathize or sympathize with the different characters at different points,
yeah.
and then you sort of have to reflect on yourself
right.
and your own responses
yeah.
to things.
Yeah.
Yep. And that was our discussion of A Different Man. This is Movies 101. I'm Dan Webster, and earlier in the show, Nathan Weinbinder, Mary Pat Truthart, and I discussed Joker, Folie à Deux. Let's now take this moment to thank Cassie Fox for both producing and engineering the show. And we thank you to our loyal listeners. We invite you back next week, same time, same spot on the radio dial, when we'll again check out all the best that cinema has to offer wherever we can find it. Until then, consider these words from the Canadian physician and author Gabor Maté. Abnormality does not reside in the pathology of individuals, but in the very culture that drives people into suffering and dysfunction. You're listening to Movies 101 on Spokane Public Radio.
The Movies 101 podcast is made possible by the members of Spokane Public Radio. Become a member at SpokanePublicRadio.org. Thanks for listening to Movies 101.